potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Pacific Rim Uprising, Unsane, Sherlock Gnomes, and Midnight Sun. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Pitch Perfect 3 and a look back at the original Pacific Rim from 2013. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I got some feedback on the show last week and also some of my radio calls that I do, individual hits to stations throughout the weekend. One of them was interesting because it was about the movie 7 Days in Entebbe, which I didn't do very well last week at all. Nobody saw it, which I think is funny that I got a little bit of feedback from that for the reviews. And essentially, the big push that I had was somebody had taken me to task because I didn't just straight up call the hijackers in the movie terrorists. I was trying to describe, well, they were, you know, Palestinians and Germans sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, and that I didn't like just immediately go with the terrorist label. And I get that. I understand it. Because here's the thing. When it comes to the whole Palestinian-Israeli thing, it gets very personal very fast, especially for a lot of people, because it is personal. It's not just a political discussion. There are real people's lives affected by this, really. And you get the flack from both sides. You know, there's a lot of Israelis that are dealing with terrorist bombings, and they got people launching missiles at them. I was literally in Israel, in Jerusalem, when the air raid sirens are going off because there are bombs coming out from the West Bank. And on the Palestinian side, there are people that really feel like they've been wronged and that there's bloodshed on their side. And like, for example, when Gal Gadot was chosen to play Wonder Woman, she's Israeli. And so suddenly there was a big push. It didn't get a whole lot of press, but there was this big push from people with a pro-Palestinian worldview that were going after her because of some of the things she said. So it gets very contentious very fast. And my intention was not to downplay the terrorism angle of this. I mean, in the movie, they're hijackers. They hijack a plane. Of course they're terrorists. But it's hard to explain in that movie because the two main characters that are actually focused on the film are Germans who are sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, and they work with this, like, the Front for the Liberation of Palestine, but this offshoot that really only existed in the 70s. And if you say Palestine and liberation, people think the PLO, which it wasn't that. And so, it's actually very complicated. And even the Palestinians in the movie take secondary and tertiary roles to Rosamund Pike and Daniel Brühl's character. So a lot of it's just sort of the trappings of being on the radio and trying to explain a relatively complicated backdrop, not just the plot, but the backdrop to the plot of a movie. So if I offended anybody with how I sort of have framed anything, my apologies. It's very difficult to kind of distill this down into a 30-second explanation of a plot. Another piece that I got a little bit of feedback on I thought was interesting was about I Can Only Imagine. And the subject of the email I got was from a guy named John, and the subject line read, "Last podcast, Christian Rock / movies and Hawking." I mean, I talked about Stephen Hawking last week. And he starts off the email and says, "I attend an evangelical church in Columbus, one with a large congregation and a conservative base." And immediately I was like, oh no, because I kind of threw a lot of shade to I Can Only Imagine, having not seen the movie. I kind of was very critical of a lot of these Christian movies, a lot of these faith-based movies, and in particular, Christian Rock. And I thought, oh no, I'm going to get taken to task because I was critical of this. So, you know, and that's people can do that. But then I read on, and his email says, "That being said, I also recall the sermon where a pastor echoes what you said. That is that Christian Rock and many of the Christian-themed movies just aren't well done and aren't a good way to spread the word." I thought that was interesting, and it made me feel good because I'm not the only one seeing that. And I don't have a problem at all with the message. I just have the problem with the delivery. It's not very well done from an artistic standpoint and from a creative standpoint. And which is why when there's movies like Passion of the Christ, or the year before, we had that movie Risen with Joseph Fiennes, which I thought was quite good, because they were well done production value professional movies, and they didn't have that cheese factor to them. So when they have movies like that, they tend to race to the top. And a movie like, I remember Heaven is for Real came out several years ago about the kid that had sort of like a near-death experience. Greg Kinnear was in it. And there's moments in that movie where it slips into cheese. But overall, it's a well-done movie. I thought Miracles from Heaven, for the most part, the one with Jennifer Gardner a year or two ago, for the most part, I thought that was well done. Now, other movies like I never saw The Shack, and I didn't see War Room. And there's a bunch of them I didn't see because they just don't screen them. A lot of times, they don't screen them. But then there's other movies like, what was it, 90 Minutes in Heaven with Hayden Christensen? That was a terrible movie. So there are good ones out there in terms of quality filmmaking, and those are the ones that I would love to see more of. If you go back to like the original Ben-Hur, that's a great example of a movie that has faith-based roots, but it's a well-done movie. I mean, Ben-Hur is considered one of the best movies ever made. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And, you know, thanks to John for pointing that out and saying, hey, I'm not the only one seeing this. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Tag, which opens on June 15th.
Our group of friends has been playing the same game of Tag for 30 years.
What?
For the entire month of May, every year, we play Tag.
You pushed me.
You never know when someone's going to pop up.
Congratulations, buddy. You're in.
Doing great, Anna.
Our buddy Jerry is the best that ever played.
And now he wants to retire.
Never been tagged. Just saying.
So who's it?
You can't touch it.
It's the year we get Jerry.
Synchronize your watches.
I don't know how to do that.
I don't wear a watch.
Time is a construct.
This actually kind of looks funny. I'm all for the screwball comedy, the modern screwball comedy. I mean, we don't have Doris Day and Rock Hudson doing this stuff anymore. We have, you know, people like Ed Helms. And this looks like it might be fun. I mean, and it's weird that Ed Helms kind of becomes the poster boy for goofy screwball comedies. I think him and Jason Sudeikis, for the most part, when you see them in movies, they're doing the screwball comedies. At least that's the one that are the highest profiles. This looks like it's going to be funny, and it has some good people in it. It has Jake Johnson from New Girl. It's got Jeremy Renner, who he's a funny guy, and it's nice to see him do something with comedy because he tends to play a much darker, more, you know, grizzled character. So this one, I think this could be a lot of fun. It might be one of those surprise hits for the summer. The next one is Won't You Be My Neighbor, opens on June 8th.
A television program for children made its unauspicious debut on station WQED in Pittsburgh. Its host, Fred Rogers.
If you take all of the elements that make good television and do the exact opposite, you have Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
He was radical. I know everyone says that, but he was radical.
Won't you please, won't you please, please won't you be my neighbor?
Very rarely does a trailer almost move me to tears, but I mean, I grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And yes, once you got to a certain age, which is very quick in your life, it becomes goofy and cheesy and you want to make fun of it. And I remember when I was like 10, I was goofing on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But when I was 5, I really enjoyed it. And there's a sweetness there. And there's a lovability and a pureness and an authenticity to Fred Rogers that we don't have now, because it was this special time in the 60s and the 70s when you didn't have a lot of production value thrown into it. You didn't have a lot of money thrown into a show like this. And it was charming, and it had just came from such a good place. I've heard a lot of good things about Won't You Be My Neighbor, and I am looking forward to it. I think this is going to be one of those that's going to be like that I Am Big Bird documentary that's just going to kind of touch me on a personal level because I grew up with it. So I'm very much looking forward to this one. It opens on June 8th. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be previewing Midnight Sun and Sherlock Gnomes.
Let the Midnight Special shine a light on me. Let the Midnight Special shine a light on me.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. Let's talk about Midnight Sun. Bella Thorne plays a girl who is allergic to sunlight, who falls in love with a boy next door, and tries to have a normal relationship.
I have a severe sensitivity to sunlight. Doctor appointments became a part of my routine. So I spend all my time indoors, behind special windows, sleeping during the day and staying up all night, and playing music every chance I get. Only waiting, so I'll
keep breathing. Hey. I don't understand how we've never met. I've probably skated by your house every day on the way to practice. Hey, you wouldn't want to do something sometime, would you?
I'm really busy during the day, but I could be free at night.
This is like one of those movies that it just screams Nicholas Sparks, even though it's not written by Nicholas Sparks. And you know it's not written by Nicholas Sparks because it doesn't take place in Savannah. I didn't see this movie because it wasn't screened. And what's infuriating to me about this is I know for a fact it was shown with great regularity in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I'm from, before its release, because we had the Arnold Classic, which is a big fitness event. Yeah, I know, Kevin, what are you doing? What do you know anything about a fitness event, fat guy at the movies? But no, there's a big fitness event in Columbus, Ohio, the Arnold Classic, which takes place, it's early March every year. And I mean, it's huge. It's one of the biggest events of the city. And Schwarzenegger comes into town, and even when he was governor, and he took time out to come to Columbus and run this event and work on this event. And apparently, they had a couple showings of this movie because, well, who's one of the stars? Patrick Schwarzenegger, which is Arnold's son, and Arnold even shows up. And apparently, I was talking to the security people who run the screenings. And I was talking to one of them and she was telling me, oh yeah, Schwarzenegger, Arnold shows up and he comes to the event. It was kind of cool that he was there. They didn't let press into this. They didn't let us even know about that. So it's bad enough when they don't screen it. It's twice as bad when they screen it, but don't let press in or don't let press know it's happening. Like Love, Simon, for example, last week, they had two press screenings. I ended up finding a stub screening that they did a promotional AMC stub screening because it just so happened that it fell on conflicting dates with other screenings, but they screened it and they invited press. And I said, okay, that's good. That shows that they have confidence in the film. But they showed this movie multiple times in Columbus. One of them, which included Arnold Schwarzenegger showing up for the screening, didn't let press know at all. If that's ever an indication that they know this movie's going to get butchered by reviewers, that's it. And there's probably a very good reason. And I, you know, as much as I love Arnold, I think this probably has a lot to do with Patrick Schwarzenegger. I don't know if he does a good job in the movie. I've not seen it. But I've seen the trailer, and he's awful in the trailer. I mean, Bella Thorne is a beautiful girl and she can act. And I think she certainly has talent and she's the person who's carrying this movie. He just looks like he's a guy with a great smile. And what's funny is we'll talk about Pacific Rim Uprising in a little bit, but we got Scott Eastwood in that one. So this seems to be the weekend where you have the sons of actors who are well more famous than them. And the sons don't have as much charisma. You know, Scott Eastwood, he may look like a young Clint Eastwood, but he doesn't have the acting prowess or charisma that Clint Eastwood does. I think he's a good-looking kid. And Patrick Schwarzenegger does not have the screen presence that his father does. He just kind of looks like just this kid. And the name alone isn't, you can't just put Schwarzenegger on the poster like you did with the Predator poster and sell it with another Schwarzenegger. Arnold had and still has a charisma on screen that I don't think his son quite has. All we need now is a Jaden Smith movie this weekend. Do we got a Jaden Smith movie opening this weekend? Because then you'd have the trifecta of actors who aren't as talented as their father. I mean, at least that's not a ubiquitous thing. I mean, look at Kiefer Sutherland. When he finally figured out what roles he was good at, he was great. And he's very different than Donald Sutherland, but both of them hold their own. And same thing with Kirk Douglas and Michael Douglas had very different on-screen roles. You know, Kirk Douglas was the tough guy. Michael Douglas was kind of the scoundrel. And they both had very successful careers. I don't know if that's going to happen with Scott Eastwood or Patrick Schwarzenegger, but that's what they're trying. Anyways, Midnight Sun, it looks like, I guess if you're a teenager and you want to see a plot like this, it looks like it's going to be perfectly fine. This seems to be like the third movie of that we've seen recently of somebody who's got a medical ailment. Did they have that one with the girl from Hunger Games? I forget the name, but she had an immune deficiency, so she couldn't go outside the house, and then she ran off with her boyfriend. And it seems like this is the boy in the plastic bubble is being remade multiple times in different forms, but from the female perspective. So, I don't know. I guess it worked for John Travolta in the 70s. Huh? Anyways, Midnight Sun wasn't screened for press. It was screened for people. But because of that, it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about Sherlock gnomes. When some garden gnomes go missing, Gnomeo and Juliet call on the world-famous detective to track them down.
They were supposed to live happily ever after. But when their world is in danger...
Juliet, the gnomes, they're all gone.
There's only one gnome to call.
I'm Sherlock Gnomes, sworn protector of garden gnomes.
We can't let anyone hear this, but they're going to smash us all tomorrow night.
Smashed? This guy said we're all going to be smashed tomorrow.
Oh, God. When Shrek first came out, it was clever. They had all these sort of modern fairy tale puns, and the twisted fairy tale was relatively new. But after, what, 4 Shrek movies, and Ella Enchanted, and films like Happily Never After, the whole twisted fairy tale, modern puns put in a fairy tale fantasy backdrop, that's just gotten old very fast. And when Gnomeo and Juliet came out, I don't know how, 4 or 5 years ago, I hated that movie. I did not like it. It did well. I mean, it actually was kind of one of these little surprise hits, but not for any help from me, because I did not like that movie. It made plenty of money, and so, of course, they're going to make a sequel, and so Gnomeo and Juliet spawns Sherlock Gnomes. And I guess we're going to keep getting these if they keep doing well, and there's still puns to be made with the word gnome. But when the title of your movie relies on a crappy pun, I have very little faith on the rest of the movie. And don't throw at me, like, oh, it has good actors in it. It's James McAvoy and Emily Blunt's in it and Johnny Depp's in it. They take like a day in a booth and they get paid a really nice paycheck for just doing a day or two of work. The voice acting gig is really lucrative, and that's why you get big names to do crappy movies. This just looks... I mean, it looks harmless. It's not what's wrong with the world right now that they're making Sherlock Gnomes after Gnomeo and Juliet. There were no Thursday screenings. And normally that's not a big thing for animated movies because most kids are going to go see it on the weekends with their parents, which means that they're trying to hold off reviews. Again, anytime they're trying to avoid reviews, that should be a red flag. And I beat that drum to say, hey, Hollywood, you dummies, just screen your movies. It wasn't shown. It wasn't screened. I wasn't even given an opportunity to see it, so it's gotta suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about movies that I did see, and they actually had the cojones to show, including Pacific Rim Uprising. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm getting ready to talk about Pacific Rim, and I've brought into the magical studio in the sky a new special guest, or an old special guest. He hasn't been on since last summer, and that is Nicholas Carr. Say hello, Nicholas.
Hello.
All right. We have my son. You are, how old are you?
9 and a half.
I would say if there's a movie about giant robots blowing things up, that's the target market, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, even more than, like, you did Cars 3 with me, right?
Uh-huh.
And you also did, what else did you review?
Captain Underpants.
Anything with underpants is also target market for you.
And
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, right?
Yeah.
We have the first Pacific Rim, which I showed you on video, on Blu-ray. And we're going to cover that one first. We're going to kind of give a flashback to that because, of course, last week I did Tomb Raider, so I wanted to go back and watch the original Tomb Raider. And we're going to do a review of the first Pacific Rim first, because that's the one that came out first. When giant monsters enter our world from a rift at the bottom of the ocean, it takes giant robots with two mind-linked pilots to defeat them.
The Drift. Two pilots melding memories with the body of a machine.
2,500 tons of awesome.
The world is coming to an end. Today we face the monsters that are at our door and bring the fight to them. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Everyone knows what I thought of Pacific Rim, but I want to know what you thought of it as a almost 10-year-old watching robots. Because you didn't see it. You were too young to see the original, right?
Yes.
But I showed it to you. What did you think?
It was awesome.
It was awesome? Just plain old awesome. Yeah. What made it so awesome?
Well, I don't know, actually.
Just giant robots and giant monsters?
Yeah.
Did you think there was too much action in that movie?
A bit.
Bit too much? Not just enough? You do realize...
Well, a bit too much action.
Too much action. See, one of the things I liked about it, the director of it is Guillermo del Toro. Do you know who Guillermo del Toro is?
No.
Okay, he won an Oscar this year for Shape of Water. Do you know what The Shape of Water is about?
No.
Do you want to know what it's about?
Sure.
It's about a woman who can't speak, who falls in love with a fish god.
Oh.
Oh, you are underwhelmed by that. This is the voice of the future, people. He's like, mute woman, fish god, you know, big love story. Oh, well.
It's kind of like Mute.
Like Mute? You didn't see Mute.
Yeah, but I saw a bit of it.
You didn't, well, you walked in when I was watching it?
Yes.
Well, you've seen it on the Netflix menu.
Yeah.
Because, okay. I didn't show a Mute. I wouldn't inflict that on Mute's not that good of a movie. But you did watch The Babysitter with me, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was the one you wanted to watch.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Anyways, so Pacific Rim was good.
Uh-huh.
Giant robots blowing things up. I thought the action was what made the movie, because right after they came out with Godzilla a couple years later, and that one, Gareth Edwards kind of backed off on the monster action. He didn't have all the kaiju fights. It's almost like he was saving everything for the end. And he's like, I don't know if I have enough to fill an entire action sequence with two kaiju fighting. And it seemed like Guillermo del Toro looked at it and said, what? I only get 7 scenes of giant action robot smackdowns? I'm not going to have enough time in the movie. You know, he just had tons and tons of stuff. Like when the thing brought the ship.
When he dragged it out.
Yeah, when he's dragging the ship and then he beat him down with the ship. You like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he's like, oh, we got one other thing. A giant sword that comes out of my hand.
Yeah.
Let's lead with that next time.
Yeah.
But it was cool. What was your favorite kaiju in that movie?
Oh.
You don't have to remember the name. You can just remember what it looked like.
It had like those two kind of like points on its head.
Was it the one in the ocean?
I think, yeah.
Was that Knife Head? Not Knife Head. Knife Head was the one with the giant, like, knife out of
his called it Knife Head 2.0.
Knife Head 2.0, okay. My favorite was, I think his Leatherback was his name, was the gorilla.
Yeah.
Because he was fat. when you can have a kaiju attacking a city and he's got one heck of a beer belly, I can respect that. So, okay, Pacific Rim real quick, the original, what's your rating on it?
Rocks.
Rocks? Okay. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm here with Nicholas Carr, my son, who's 10, almost 10, and we're now talking about Pacific Rim Uprising. Years after the defeat of the kaiju, the Jaeger pilot program is rebooted to defend against another threat of attack.
The kaiju. They're going to come back.
Cadets?
You better gear up.
How'd they get into our world?
Someone let them in. Someone from our world.
Who is that?
Definitely not one of ours.
Let's do this.
Now, this was the first one you actually saw, right?
Yes.
Because we went and saw the press screening, and I took you with me, and then the next day I showed you the original.
Yes.
What'd you think of this one?
It was also good.
It was also good?
Yeah.
Now, it's a little bit odd for you because you saw this one first.
Yeah.
Did you like this one or the first one better?
I liked this one better.
Okay, why'd you like this one better? Because it had Finn from Star Wars in it?
No, I didn't even know it had Finn from Star Wars in it.
Because he spoke in a British accent.
Yeah. It was because you didn't get to see much of Marshall and you didn't know the cause of his death.
Yeah, well, because you didn't see the original movie.
Yeah.
But now you know that he was the big hero, but now it makes sense a little bit that Marshall, which is a great name, Marshall Pendergast.
Yeah. Pendergast?
Pendergast, isn't that
Pentecost.
Pentecost, that's right, Pentecost. Not Pendergast. Yeah, that's right, that's Pentecost. Marshall Pendergast is way better. See, look, the kids, he won't let it slide if I mess up a name, right?
No.
No, okay. All right. Did you like the characters in this one? Did you think that they were good?
Yeah.
Can I make a guess that part of the reason I think you liked it is because they had younger kids. They were like kids fighting as the kaiju. Whereas in the first Pacific Rim, it was all a bunch of grown-ups.
Absolutely.
You like kids. Yeah. Would you like to fight with a Jaeger pilot?
Yeah.
You'd like to get in a giant robot and beat on some kaiju?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I like this is because I saw a character that I know. Like,
oh, really?
An actor.
An actor, which, well, not Finn, obviously, because he was disguising himself with a beard and an accent.
Yeah. That guy who was, when they were first introduced, there was a guy and a girl fighting each other.
Okay.
And the guy I know.
Was he one of the Jaeger pilots?
Yeah, he was one of the kids.
Oh, okay. What'd you know him from?
Jesse.
Oh, okay, the TV
and,
show.
And the sequel.
Okay. So you saw some famous... See, and that's interesting, because they do cast movies like that. They say, okay, well, we're going to take a character or an actor that this audience that we want to get is familiar with. That's one of, like, the Chinese girl who ran the company.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's real famous in China. Nobody knows who she is in America, but she's really famous in China. And the first Pacific Rim did very well, no pun intended, in the Pacific Rim, because these kind of, the kaiju movies are like Godzilla. They all come from, you know what kaiju means.
Yeah.
Yeah, giant monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It literally told us that in one of the movies.
Yeah, it tells you that, because that's what Godzilla is. You know who Godzilla is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched the movie.
That's okay. The movie's a little boring. I can show it to you if you want.
No.
No? I mean,
if you said it's really boring,
well,
I don't want to watch the movie.
They have a couple good monster battles.
Okay.
You've watched more boring movies than Godzilla, trust me.
Okay.
So, my thing is with Pacific Rim Uprising, I thought was really good. I thought it had the action, and it wasn't a garbage Transformer movie. It wasn't as good as the first one because Guillermo del Toro wasn't directing it, and I think he's a really good director. And I thought the cast was pretty good. Scott Eastwood, who was the Jaeger pilot along with Finn.
Yeah.
He's Clint Eastwood's son, and you don't know who Clint Eastwood is.
No. I don't know most of these actors.
Yeah, I know. You'll get there eventually. But overall, I thought Pacific Rim was good.
Yeah.
So what do you give it? Rocks? Sucks? Kind of rocks? Kind of sucks?
Rocks.
Pacific Rim Uprising gets a rocks from Nick, and it gets a rocks from me.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Unsane, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Pitch Perfect 3. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap up the movie reviews. Thank you, Nick, for being my guest in the last segment. Let's talk about Unsane now. After checking herself into a hospital for observation, a woman is held under orders for paranoia about being followed by a stalker.
Your life slips away from you, you know? Changing your phone number and your email becomes normal.
But you still see your stalker everywhere?
Rationally, I know this is my imagination, but I'm alone in a strange city, and I never feel safe. There's been some kind of mistake.
By signing this, you've consented to voluntary commitment.
I am being held here against my will.
Do you know how many calls the cops get like that every week?
Those are from crazy people.
This is directed by Steven Soderbergh. And what's interesting with Soderbergh's stuff is whenever he comes out with a movie, there's always something extra to talk about, not just the movie and the plot and the characters, but there's always something about how it was made, either the friends of his that got involved in the movie or the way he's doing it. And he goes all the way back to Sex, Lies, and Videotapes at the end of the 80s, where he was always an innovative, independent-minded director. And a lot of people remember him for like the Oceans movies. Now, I had heard that he had shot this on an iPhone, and that's actually kind of cool. Of course, the movie Tangerine was shot on an iPhone as well. But the reason that's important is the accessibility of imagery for an independent filmmaker is so much better than it ever has been. I mean, I remember back in the 80s, if you wanted to do something low budget, the closest you could do was video, and video always looked like crap. And then in the late 90s into the 2000s, you started getting these cameras, these digital cameras that actually gave a cinematic quality and could do it with a frame rate. And of course, then eventually you got the 24P, which was what was developed for Star Wars. And then, you know, the Red, which is a very affordable camera for an independent filmmaker. Well, now you just have to have an iPhone. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have professional lenses and professional lighting and a whole crew. He didn't just go shoot this on the weekends with buddies. This was a full-fledged production, but in terms of what you captured it on the iPhone, it shows that if you have a little bit of know-how and you know how to manipulate the light and you have the right lenses and you have good performances, you can actually have a really professional-looking film. Of course, it helps to have Claire Foy as the lead actress in there. Like I said, it's not just your buddies from work who are making this movie. Now, essentially, it's a thriller. In fact, it plays like a horror movie in many ways, and it's very, very dark. One thing it also does is her character, while she's the hero of the movie, and while she's the protagonist, and while she is the person we feel sympathy for, she's imperfect, which is very real. I mean, she makes dumb decisions, but not just dumb decisions like horror movie dumb decisions of running up the stairs or tripping or splitting up when a mass killer's after you. She just makes not the best decisions with her life because it's stuff that we do all the time. I mean, she gets committed because she just signs the standard forms, and then they end up quote-unquote voluntarily committing her. This is also really impactful if you've ever had a loved one, either a family member or a friend, who has spent time in a facility, either a hospital or a nursing home or a mental institution, and you don't feel that they got the best treatment. I'm not going to go into any details, but I've recently had to deal with some stuff where this person was in a facility that, and it was a decent facility, but I felt that there was neglect and there were some issues. And this cuts really close to the bone for that, because there's a lot of realism in that. And of course it's made up for the movie, but it really gets in these primal fears we have of being caged and being trapped beyond our control. It's a very creepy movie and incredibly well done, especially approached as a horror movie. This is a horror movie through and through. Most people are going to classify it as a thriller, but it also has some really good performances. And Soderbergh's able to sort of manipulate around the, oh, obviously that couldn't happen moments and make it actually work. So Unsane, great performances, great directing, and actually a really solid, creepy, get under your skin kind of movie. So I'm going to say Unsane rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week, Black Panther won again. It's its fifth straight weekend. I don't think a movie's done that since Avatar in 2009. And some of it's because the competition hasn't been all that great. But still, let's not take that away from Black Panther. Black Panther's been seeing very small drops. It only dropped 35% from the previous weekend. And I think by now it's the highest grossing Marvel movie. It's incredibly doing incredibly well. It's not going to reach like Star Wars, The Force Awakens, but it's in striking distance of The Last Jedi. So that's great for Black Panther. Tomb Raider did about what it had expected. It just didn't do it well enough to overtake Black Panther. But the big surprise this weekend was I Can Only Imagine, which I mentioned earlier, which was about $17 million, just over $17 million, which is fantastic. That's like a really good number. It was surprised everybody. No one expected it to make this much money. And it got A+ cinema score, and it seems to be that one of those little movies that could. Tomb Raider did significantly better percentage-wise at the box office. In terms, I mean, it made almost $24 million. I can only imagine it made $17 million. Why is one a hit? Why is one not? Well, that's because Tomb Raider costs so much more to make. And I can only imagine, I think the budget's listed as like $7 million. And I know they didn't spend a ton of money on marketing and advertising, so they're probably getting out of the red this week with this movie already. And that is a testament to the film. Now, the part of the thing is, having not seen the movie, you got to understand why these movies tend to do well. They tend to do well because they're marketed directly to an audience. They market it to the Christian audience. They market it to churches, and you get buses going. We also haven't had one of these in a long time. I think the last one that was a contemporary religious or faith-based movie, I think, was The Shack back in the fall. What you're going to see now is that you got a barrage of like God's Not Dead 3 and a couple other faith-based movies going to be coming out, because Easter time is about when they start really pumping those things out. These tend to do well, especially if they're spaced out. If you try and cram too many into the marketplace, they don't do as well. The other thing is the cinema score. The reason it's got such a great cinema score, because I've seen articles where they're like, well, this shows that audiences respond to this. Well, yes and no. Cinema score works by people going to see a movie and then coming out and they're interviewed. And so, first of all, you're only sampling an audience that has seen the movie, and the people who tend to see movies are people who want to see the movies. Like, if you don't like big bombastic action movies, you're not going to see Pacific Rim this weekend. So already your people are predisposed to like the movie, which is why, like, a good cinema score is in the B-plus to the A range, why a B-minus cinema score is kind of considered bad, because it's kind of the built-in audience responding to it. So these movies, like I Can Only Imagine, are marketed to churches and Christian groups and that demographic. So those are the people going to the movies, and it plays to them. That's why these faith-based movies tend to do well. Whereas like maybe like a faith-based movie, I mentioned Risen earlier. Risen's a little bit more of that biblical epic, and it can kind of cross-pollinate to a different audience, so it's not just a Christian base that's seeing it, and that can pull down the cinema score a bit. That's not to take anything away from the success of I Can Only Imagine, and that's probably going to have great legs going into the spring, especially as we're heading into Holy Week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That's on Means It's Time to Roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. Really quickly, I want to talk about Pitch Perfect 3. I didn't review this actually at Christmas. I was on a cruise, so I wasn't going to go see it. Anyways, Pitch Perfect 3, the Bellas have one final chance to sing together when they go on the USO tour in Europe to entertain the troops.
I would do anything to sing with you guys again.
Every year the USO puts on this performance to support the troops in Europe.
One last show together.
Yeah! Welcome to Spain, Bellas.
So this is the first base. Will we be going to second base with you guys?
My record label wants to sign one of the bands, but we don't want the Bellas. We want you.
What?
I did not see this coming.
I thought the first Pitch Perfect wasn't a great movie, but it was certainly was fun, and it was cute, and I enjoyed it. The second one I thought was one of those unnecessary sequels. It was like American Pie 2. And while if you're a fan of the franchise, like if you like the Austin Powers movies, you're okay with the second movie because you're like, ah, it's just an excuse to get the movie made. And even in that movie, the Austin Powers movie, they make a joke about, oh, we're just making this to just go along with it. Whereas organic sequels, that, like something like the Star Wars movies, can have multiple parts to it. And so Pitch Perfect 2, I thought, even though it did extremely well and it beat out the first one, I thought it was a weaker movie. This one's even worse. I mean, it's not a good movie. It's recycling old jokes. I'm tired of the pitches pun for, all right, pitches, we're going to get ready, get going. I just hate that so much. The ock, excuse me. These jokes were played out two movies ago and they're still using them. There's some clever stuff in there, but the best stuff's with Rebel Wilson. She's funny, but I mean, the characters don't gel. It's forced. It's really kind of shoehorning everyone into the film. So I'm going to have to say Pitch Perfect 3 sucked.
It sucks.
Other movies that are out this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, and Downsizing with Matt Damon. And that is it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Ready Player One. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.